Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Me again? Are you not getting sick of us? Hello.
I'm not sick of him at all. We occupy this one room of foam where we record everything, and it all just gets done.
This recording space, which we record all the podcasts in, it's kind of like a casino because there's no windows, and every time I leave, I don't know what time it is.
No, it's also like some sort of a Captain America-style experimental chamber.
It where does kind of look like
all
that,
the lights
it?
Are on us, yeah, and just whatever happens in here seems to work. And
I feel like I'm getting winter soldiered every time I come in here. I'm gonna go out of this room thinking Ellie Noir was bad because she brainwashed us.
You're gonna be stepping out of the room into a room of a field of daffodils, not wondering where you're came from. But yeah, we thought we'd do a news podcast because there's various things kicking off. We've done some videos that have been separated that are obviously over on the channel. Some stuff that is based around specific video games, Rise of the Ronin, Dragon's Dogma 2, we can now talk about. Whenever you see them on the channel is when we're allowed to talk about them. But there's plenty more things to talk about that are going on in the background. We're going to start with a game trailer reveal, then we'll get to some stuff that's happening with Bungie and Remedy. The first thing to talk about is Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra.
Dude, this came out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, the thing, okay, so this is an interesting thing. People might have seen the trailer by now. If not, go watch it. I thought this was a CG trailer. It's not. It's in-engine. It's in Unreal Engine 5. And this is a game that has been mentioned for a while, leaked for a while, the idea of a Captain America Black Panther crossover game directed by Amy Hennig, or at least including Amy Hennig, person who was fundamental in bringing Uncharted to life, bringing Legacy of Kain to life, Jack and Daxter, and the last thing that I think she was on. Her name was attached to Forspoken, but I would legally ask someone to prove what the hell she did in Forspoken.
Right.
Because as far as fellow co-writer Gary Witter is concerned, everything that they contributed to was thrown out at the beginning of production. And so to me, this is the return of Amy Hennig. She was involved in Project Ragtag over with EA. It was going to be a Star Wars game, got cancelled. So point being that there's a lot of caliber with Amy Hennig, and she's not been able to capitalize on that in a good long time. There's a bit more to talk about in terms of playable characters and stuff, but thoughts on the old trailer?
It's just so great to finally see something she's worked on finally come to fruition. Like you said, she's had such hard luck over the past decade at this point, you know, exiting the Uncharted franchise, moving on to EA, having that project be cancelled, coming and going from other studios, starting up her own. So to finally see, like, not the finished product, but something from her and that team, and it to be looking this good and promising, I couldn't believe it. I know this game was, you know, announced in its infancy a couple of years ago that there was a collaboration going on, but I didn't know it was going to be this, and I mean that in the good way. I didn't know it was going to be a 1940s period piece with both Captain America and Black Panther and the rise of Hydra, you know, them kind of going at each other in this, in the, you know, kind of horrific snow-filled streets of occupied Paris. What the hell? Like, alternate reality.
Shout out to the Saboteur.
What on earth? Yeah, like, I like the Saboteur. I thought this looked amazing, and when I did, well, when it was revealed that it was all, like, in-engine, and, like, that's how the cinematics are going to look, I think that facial tech is great.
Yeah,
like, the lip-syncing in particular looks astonishing. I am so sold on this. I can't believe that, you know, we've talked for the past few weeks about the lack of risks in the gaming industry. Even though this is a superhero IP, it feels like a risk. It feels like something new.
My thing with, like, I personally wouldn't say it's a risk, but I wonder if, I don't know, I wonder if one of the only reasons it got over the finish line, and I'm glad of it, I'm obviously glad of it, is because Epic are showing off Unreal Engine 5 right now. Like, they are literally in real time, the last few days before we were recording this, showing off all their new animation rigs, all the new stuff for Fortnite. They're doing a whole big thing about, like, 100% revenue goes to the devs for the first 6 months if you sign with them and use the Unreal Engine and put your games on the Epic Store. They need a front and center showpiece to be like, look what something AAA can look like that isn't Fortnite. And this fits that bill very nicely. Like, it's not the, at least to me, it doesn't feel like the general energy around Marvel or MCU has gotten any more positive.
But, really? Okay.
I wouldn't say overall it hasn't to me, but I think this is such a strong showing. It reminded me of Andor, where it was just like, even though there's the Disneyfication of everything and everything feels really sterile and sexless and boring, you can do really good stories and character-driven stuff in those frameworks, and they can feel refreshing and original. Andor is like the best Star Wars thing.
Yeah,
I was going to say ever, but like in a long time. And this feels so, so strong. And because Hennig's directing it, I think you can already feel it in a lot of the cutscene. Obviously, it's entirely cutscene based so far, but the general direction, the fact that it's a dialogue-driven trailer,
yes.
Like, which is such a, I would say, a hallmark of her work. Like, I love Legacy of Kain and Uncharted so much, and it was the character writing and the character-first dialogue stuff that got me in. So, like, I'm up for this. I get some people saying that the dude that's playing Cap looks a bit too close to the dude from Captain America and Winter Soldier. Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I was literally talking about this to Adam Nicholas downstairs. Right. I was going, does he look, he looks like him to you, right? I didn't know if it was just me. That's like, that's a weird, validating, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like a weird beat, because when the Avengers was showing off, there was a collective like, ugh, from like when Square Enix showed off their Avengers before 2020, it was like, I think a lot of people assumed it was going to look like the MCU, and then when it wasn't an MCU tie-in, like, people didn't like the look of those characters. They looked like off-brand versions of those characters. I love the look of especially Black Panther in this.
Yeah.
But Cap is like, I mean, I haven't seen that much of him outside the helmet or anything, so there is that side of it. I didn't realize that there's four playable characters, though.
Yes.
You've got Captain America, Black Panther, there's another Wakandan spy called Nanali or Nanali, and there's a US soldier called Gabriel Jones. So jumping between them in real time, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's two-on-two, really.
Going from the trailer, I was really interested and curious as to how the character swapping is going to go, because it seems like, at least in the early portion of the game, Captain America and Black Panther are going to kind of be at each other's throats, have that antagonistic sort of frenemy rivalry. So are we taking these different characters, you know, on very specific missions where we choose one or maybe two? Are we going to be able to just team them up as we'd like? Like, how is that going to work? How are the, you know, different skill sets and combat styles going to complement each other? I like the fact that it's four player, because, you know, I mean, I loved the elements of Guardians of the Galaxy, the game, when it was focusing on the relationships between those characters. And I was actually a little bit gutted that you couldn't character swap in that game.
True.
So if this takes a similarly story-driven approach to the narrative, but also gives you control over a bunch of different heroes, that to me is a good way to have an ensemble without going down the Suicide Squad route of being, we've got four playable characters, but they're all the same, and it doesn't really matter who you choose, and it's just your pals can jump in if they want. If not, just pretend they're not there.
Yeah, I wonder how much that was like one of the reasons that Guardians wasn't more recommended on a gameplay side, because to me, the best parts of that game are where it acts like a Mass Effect, like it feels like Mass Effect 2 where you're, or 3, where you're, or any of them, where you're dipping into different characters and finding out their stories and spending ages talking to crew members. Like, the Guardians game is awesome. It's just that, like, that only playing the Starkiller stuff got a bit boring over time. It was just standard.
Yes.
There was only so much you can do with the Twin Blaster build, really.
I didn't really like the way combat even felt in that game, to be honest. I kind of bounced off it a lot, but hopefully this is more direct and impactful. And I imagine, you know, it's an action-adventure title from Amy Hennig. I imagine there's going to be some Uncharted DNA in there somewhere, and hopefully it has that kind of visceral thrill to it. The reason I do describe it as a risk is because of kind of what you mentioned before about it being this dialogue-driven trailer, and it just seems from the tone that's been established, from the way the characters are speaking to each other, it just has, it might not be, you know, an 18-rated game, it probably won't be, but the source material just seems like it has this darkness to it, this maturity to it, that even if you, maybe if it is targeting a younger audience, just is taking the characters seriously, but not in a way that's overly done, but also not in a way that kind of feels like it needs to draw attention to itself like some of the Marvel movies, which I even like, you know, constantly being that. Like,
there's no
having
quips.
That wink or yeah. a quip or like a bit of a nudge. It just seems like, oh no, this is World War II. We're talking about Hydra. We're talking about these warring factions. We're talking about this part of France, and we're going to take it seriously. We're going to tell a serious story, and hopefully that has dramatic weight to it.
Yeah, it seems super confident. Like you said, it kind of came out of nowhere, even though it had been leaked beforehand. My thing is on, I want to see gameplay. Like, I want to know how it feels to play as Cap, because, like, as much, I really like the Captain America movie tie-in from, like, 2011 or whatever it was, just because you could bounce a shield off, like, five dudes, and, like, I like any game where I can bounce a projectile off dudes, and it's, like, it's rarely done with Captain America. You can do a little bit in the Ultimate Alliance games. You can do, like, a little bit of it in that Captain America game. There's like, quite a bit of it. There's a bit of it in Destiny if you play as a shield build, but I feel like that mechanic, nailing the physics of that and getting it really chunky and satisfying, should be awesome. And then you've kind of got the actually the Avengers game, that's one where you had Cap, but it didn't feel you were targeting it.
That's
it was,
not
like,
quite
it was more like
the
one
same.
Projectile. It wasn't like feeling like a physics object.
Yeah.
If they can get that stuff to work where it has the kind of the heft of like God of War's Leviathan axe, where
that's
like you're
template,
really grabbing it
yeah.
and then flinging it back out again, that could be sick. And it's like if you're flinging it out, doing some combos, grab, throw again, like, I just feel like that could be a really cool combat model.
Yes.
And that's only one of four characters. So, like, I really hope they go all out with the best parts of what we all think of when we think of the golden era of the MCU.
Absolutely.
And there's probably, like, a lot you could do with that.
I think that's going to come into play with this being Unreal Engine 5. And it's weird. Mm. I was watching this trailer, and I mean this in a nice way, even though the comparison is from a game that turned out to be a bit of a disaster. But I got the feeling watching this that I did the first time I saw the trailer for Watch Dogs, where it felt right. like something like new in terms of technology. Mm. Like I said, I was looking at the faces and the quality of the animation there and just thinking, I've not seen something as good as this in real time in some time. Mm-hmm. It felt like a generational step forward. It felt like I was looking at it and going, ah, that's next gen, finally, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously Unreal Engine 5 games are out in the wild now. There are a bunch you can play on next gen consoles. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lords of the Fallen or something is in Unreal Engine 5, but I feel like we haven't seen the AAA space capitalize on the first Unreal Engine 5 trailer that we saw a few years ago. We haven't really had that one big installment that shows us what a next-gen game with all the bells and whistles, with all the money poured into it can look like. And I'm hoping this is just one of many that we get kind of going forward.
One thing that's interesting as well is that, like, because this was all during Epic's like chunk of the GDC, the Game Developers Conference stuff, where they just showed off a bunch of projects and loads of, like, I say, animation rigs, things for Fortnite, etc. And they sort of had a cool little thing where they were showing characters. They have this whole thing where, and I'll butcher describing this, but it's like different running animation rigs, jumping, things like that. And they've written all this tech that will fill in those gaps in the most fluid way possible based on, you know, whatever you're doing as a player and making it all look natural. And they had a character like mounting over stuff, doing parkour, doing flips, rolls, moving on the spot, etc. And it was all kind of applied to like Fortnite, essentially.
Yeah.
But they were saying that when you do use Unreal 5, that stuff is available to you as a dev. And I wonder if that transfers over to Black Panther, because we don't know what kind of game this is yet. But I hope that it's got at least a semi-open world, kind of like Uncharted 4 or whatever, because it would make sense to let you be Black Panther running around in Paris in the 40s, saboteur style, but really fluid and fast and everything else.
I mean, there's that bit in the trailer where they say, you know, you're out at night running around rooftops, and that just immediately made me think of the first Assassin's Creed, where you could be in this semi-open world, a completely open world, as someone like Black Panther, you know, being agile across the streets of the city, running around the rooftops, investigating what's going on below. Oh, man, I think this has a lot of potential. I am, you know, I'm not going to go all in and say it's going to be the best game I've ever played.
No.
Because despite the talent involved, it is, I think they're called Skydance New Media. It's their first game as a studio.
And the other one was cancelled.
Yeah.
Star Wars game.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I'm like, okay, it's a fresh game. The publisher, Skydance itself, you know, I'm not one of the, not an EA, do you know what I mean? Not that I trust necessarily EA more than anyone else, but you know what I mean? I'm still a little bit, I'm cautiously optimistic, and from what I've seen so far, I really like what I've seen so far.
I think leading with the visuals, proving what Unreal 5 can look like when it's trapped by a studio that they really care about and a property that they really care about, it's interesting for now.
My question is, my final question, if you will, isn't EA doing their own Black Panther game? And I wonder how that's going to hold up against this, because I'm sure it was announced a few years ago. And initially when I saw this, I thought, oh, is this that Because when I investigated, I was like, oh no, it's different.
Yeah, it's different. They're doing their Iron Man game and a Black Panther game.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, assumedly different versions of the character entirely.
Final thoughts, actually. I just said final thoughts, but this is the real final thoughts.
More final thoughts.
Just a quick one, yes or no. Thoughts on the title?
It's reversed. Like, if it was called Rise of Hydra :1943,
yeah,
that would work better, and you can do more Rise of Hydra stuff, and you can plug other characters in and do a whole thing. I don't believe they're going to do Marvel 1943 :, anything else ever.
No,
there's not going to be a whole series of Marvel 1943. So the thing is, with all the new Marvel stuff, is that I feel the brand Bible mandate of you need Marvel in there, because it was Marvel Spider-Man, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel 1943. And it feels a bit keywordy. And
yeah,
we work on Google and search engines and YouTube and whatever, but that's my brain went to, how do we get Marvel in there?
It gives Marvel Nemesis Rise of the Imperfects to me, and I hope this game's much better than
what
that.
What a game.
Even though I have a soft spot for that. But I saw the title and I thought, that's going to change, right? They're going to alter that, maybe? It's a bit of a... Alien Romulus the other day. Something about it, like, individually, Romulus, fine, Alien, fine. Put them together and you're like, I don't know, buddy.
I don't mind that. I'm a Succession fan of Roman Romulus. I don't mind that. It's defense
it's
how it's
the
done.
Aliens called him that.
Just trying to take over the Empire. But, we'll see how it all pans out. I think that, like I said, the actual structure of that title doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but whatever. Anything can make sense over time. What the hell's going on with Bungie? Let's talk about Bungie. We have a whole report going on over at IGN, written up by Rebecca Valentine, talking about the general disarray that's happening over at Bungie and the problems they're having bringing their various projects together. I did note that this comes after Bungie laid off around 100 employees last October, and there are various conversations surrounding their efficiency as a live service studio. Destiny 2's fan base is fractured over how the expansion Lightfall went and how the final Shapes marketing has been received across the last few months. And they were also semi-responsible for shutting down Last of Us Factions multiplayer. Apparently, Sony internally had them as some sort of review board for various other live service projects, and the outcome of that was shutting down The Last of Us. They did apparently help with Helldivers 2, which is obviously a resounding success. But right now, we have the whole thing that's going on with Marathon, where it's meant to be an extraction shooter, but apparently that's really struggling to come together. And part of this report is that an internal leaker has said that nothing adds up in regards to the funding of the studio itself, the literal financials of where the money's going and coming. In terms of getting that thing over the finish line. And so apparently that was already shelved and then resumed across the last 4 years. And now we've got ex-Riot developer Joe Ziegler taking over from Christopher Barrett as the project director to try and get something over the finish line. But apparently the general sensibility internally is that management just want to get something done, and apparently they want to cash out. Internally, it's thought that Bungie's current figureheads are planning to leave in 2026 once the money from Sony's 2022 acquisition completes. So they're just trying to literally go buy the book, let's just get something done.
Yeah.
But apparently the way that it's all coming together is on fire.
What a strange studio, man. Like, I think for the past 10 years, if not longer, this studio has been a huge question mark, because on paper, you know, it's Bungie, the creators of Halo, the creators of Destiny, who ushered in this live service era that we're currently living in, for better or worse, you know, have made huge innovations in the gaming world. Sony buys them, feels like a huge coup, feels like a huge bounce back towards Xbox and their acquisition spree. Mm. And then it's gotten to the point where, honestly, I forget Sony even owns Bungie.
Like, because you haven't done anything with them.
You've advertised the Destiny expansions on the store. And admittedly, when, you know, Sony actually bought Bungie, they said Bungie's going to remain independent. We're not going to meddle too much. But has that worked out? Has it been worth the money? I just think you look at the $200 million and change that Sony paid for Insomniac, and you look at the $3 billion plus that they paid for Bungie, and one was a great deal, and one absolutely hasn't been so far.
There is like a whole email thing doing the rounds as well. It's been reported by various Destiny 4 community people, like YouTube channels, etc., talking more about the general unfavorable state that Bungie's in, and the general state that Destiny's in, and the way that they're treating that stuff. And for a while, like, if you follow Destiny stuff or Bungie fandom stuff, it has been a lot of what the hell is going on at that studio. There was always an assumption. I think that the way that Halo went after they stopped doing, obviously, Halo Reach, it got passed over to 343, and then people go back and forward on Halo 4. Nearly everybody hates Halo 5. Halo Infinite launched in a horrific state. It got there eventually. Halo Master Chief Collection launched in a horrible state. 4 years later, it's much better. But I think that because there was so much ire directed at 343, justifiably, it's not like those games launched better than they did, it let the reputation of Bungie stay intact. Hmm. Whereas if you were following certain people saying Bungie have had problems at the management level for a long time, Bungie have had problems trying to bring stuff together for a long time. Jason Schreier's own book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, goes into the original Destiny and how much of a mess that thing was. And maybe now that they were acquired, they've got more sort of impetus on turning things over, and they've got a bigger spotlight on them than ever, it's more obvious where the holes are.
Yeah, man. I mean, you mentioned Jason Schreier. I always struggle to not go Sean Connery.
Jay Schreier.
Pronouncing his name. But yeah, his book is incredible. And I remember reading that when it came out, I think it was 2016 or 2017, and reading about the production of Destiny, thinking, how can this happen to a studio this big? You know, I'd recommend you definitely go read it. But, you know, he talks in that section about how they didn't even know if they wanted to make a third-person fantasy game or a first-person sci-fi game for years. They threw the script out for Destiny less than a year, I think it was, before... Sorry, I've not read this book in a while, but I'm pretty sure it was less than a year before the game was even
about to
launch, and they had to completely rewrite it, which is why the story in the game at launch felt so threadbare. Just like these dodgy managerial positions that you would have assumed were made very early on in development, but were just in flux all the way through, and... I don't want to defend big studios like Activision or even Sony and Microsoft, right? But I look at Bungie's history. They were partnered with Microsoft. Mm-hmm. They celebrated when they went independent. They partnered with Activision. They celebrated when they went independent. Now they're partnering with Sony, and it's not working again. Mm-hmm. This is a studio that seemingly can't function on its own but can't function with anyone else. And at a certain point, you just have to kind of wonder, like, what's going on internally then? Like, something must be wrong, because these studio acquisitions and these studio divorces, like, they don't happen all the time, and it's happened three times now with Bungie.
I remember thinking it was ridiculous when they managed to leave Activision and retain the Destiny IP. That was a whole thing where the internal report was that they were popping champagne corks and they were freaking out that they got free. So when they then got bought by Sony, it was like, why?
Yeah.
Isn't your end goal to be the self-sustaining thing? Unless there's acquisition money on the cards. And that makes more sense for the people at the top who don't care about the games on the bottom. And it's been fascinating watching Bungie for the last 10 years. As someone who grew up with Halo, like, from the very, very beginning, like, they were gods. Like, the Halo's run, to me, maybe it's nostalgia talking or whatever, even though I think it's legally correct, that game's run was unmatched. Like, it just was. Halo 3 is the peak, etc. And that was all them. Like, you watch those making of documentaries, they were bearing their soul. Like, everyone from the top to the bottom, everyone was bang on. And you had the specific people that were involved, like Joseph Staten or whoever. And now they're a cold, cold company. Like, you get bits and pieces. Sometimes I forget what their old community manager was called, Luke someone. But you get bits and pieces of people coming through, humans coming through, telling you what's going on about their project, but it's nowhere near what it was in the 2000s. And it's interesting just looking at the way that it's all shaken out, because there's still, obviously, there's a lot of talent there. Clearly, the games wouldn't play so well if they didn't. I get the problems with updates, etc. But the whole thing with Destiny, the reason that it didn't get buried is because the gameplay was immaculate. Yeah. Like, back in 2014, everyone hated Destiny overall, but it played so well at the core, and it was always like, there's something here. And then it influenced so many games.
It did, yeah.
And it lasted for so long. But it's just, I feel like you can see the art departments, the coders, etc., working underneath this structure that doesn't support them.
I've always questioned the acquisition on Sony's front because, you know, part of the reason, if not the reason, why they bought Bungie was to help the wider Sony and PlayStation ecosystem deliver live service games, right? They kind of bought them for that expertise as much as they did their own future games or Destiny or anything like that. But to be honest, like, they've had some successes, of course. They turned Destiny around. Destiny 2 had really great periods, but it's also had down periods. And I just kind of think, is that as good as we can get in the live service space? You know what I mean? Like, say what you will about Bungie, I think they've made a lot of errors, and it's not like they've now perfected the formula. Record this, you know, Destiny 2 and its latest expansions is currently enduring backlash. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think, for me anyway, they weren't the framework, as successful as they were, to build a live service structure around anyway. You know, I said it when Factions was cancelled, in part because apparently Bungie took a look at it and said, oh, we need to change this, you need to do that. And I'm like, to be honest, I kind of want to see just what Naughty Dog's version of a live service would be, because I know what Bungie's version of a live service is, and a lot of people like it. It's not personally for me, but why does it have to be just one way? I know they're successful. Totally. I know it's an incredibly difficult subgenre and section of the industry to break into and make money in, but like, and I get it. I understand why Sony would buy them for that, but like, it's, we can do better, surely. Like, why is it their way or the highway almost? You know?
Which was the way that it kind of came across. It's interesting looking at something like Helldivers 2 be absolutely incredible. And obviously, that game was in development for like 8 years or whatever. But I still maintain that Sony didn't know what they had with that thing. Or they would have put way more marketing behind it. Like, they were the ones pointing at Foam Stars while Helldivers blew up underneath it. And so I wondered just what those actual conversations were. Like, Bungie are mentioned in regards to Helldivers 2, mainly just because it's a live service game. Alongside when a bunch of you were appointed this internal review board thing. But it is interesting, or it would be interesting, what those conversations were. Like, some Naughty Dog team with some Bungie team going like, this won't work, what plans have you got, etc. And then struggling to bring it all together. But either way, I feel like the general reception for Marathon wasn't sky high. There was a bit of a groundswell of people who just hate the idea of an extraction shooter. I don't feel like I've played enough of them to care one way or the other, but I do feel like there is a bit of a conversation on extraction shooters or the new Battle Royale, like the new thing that everyone tries to do one of. And another part of this conversation on Marathon is that idea that they're going to be doing something more like Overwatch, where it's more individual character builds as opposed to an overall series of things you can pick from.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To build you, to make your own character. So that didn't work out very well for Battlefield 2042.
It really didn't.
Anyone
actually,
other than
yeah.
Overwatch?
It didn't even really work out for COD. I mean, that's like specialists in the game, or depending on which subseries you play, but even that kind of reverted back, yeah.
I forgot about Black Ops
4. I know, right?
Oh my God.
I think Treyarch forgot about Black Ops 4 towards the end.
Lord.
With Bungie's sort of future, I just think, again, on paper, the acquisition should have been a home run. You get this beloved developer in who owns this massive franchise, who has all of this expertise in two genres Sony doesn't focus on, those being live services until recently, of course, and first-person shooters. Like, that should bolster their portfolio so much, and it just kind of hasn't. And it's been a couple of years, and I know these things take a long time, and we haven't seen a Marathon, you know, beyond that first trailer, really, and the proof will be in the pudding and that. But like, again, I go back to other acquisitions that Sony has made, and I think Insomniac's made like five great games in that time and has gone from strength to strength, and
they were a steal.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bungie for as big as they are, I just, what's going on, man?
That's the thing. The wider conversation, the wider amount of leaked documents, etc., is that conversation that Sony are unhappy with the purchase, that like it hasn't worked out in regards to trying to hoover up the ex-Halo devs and doing something with them. But yeah, we're yet to see how it all shakes out. But
Scott,
at the minute, not very good.
Isn't it kind of crazy? And I know Jim Ryan's left, but with all of these layoffs and stuff, it's crazy to me that someone can decide to buy a company for billions of dollars and try to pivot the other company that they own, the main company, around what they do, in this case, live services, and then decide that's not the way, pivot completely in a different direction, and then still kind of just leave their job nicely. or probably, of course, would have been allowed to stay on, and then everyone else gets, you know, laid off. And it's like, whose fault is this, really? It's not the people making the games.
Just sort of like tipping a bucket out and then just being like, that's your mess now because I've left the room. So you've got to make that
card, pick them up.
Just deal with it. The next thing down is the state of Remedy. Sadly, apparently Remedy, after publishing their financial results, have revealed a 22.2% drop in revenue across 2023. A big reason is an attempt to get a live service game off the ground. Apparently it's called Codename Vanguard, although it has a couple of different code names. But they want to do something based around their new Northlight engine, as seen in Alan Wake 2. And Remedy did say that the requirements for a successful new free-to-play game have clearly increased during the past few years. Despite promising progress during the first half of the year, we decided with Tencent that the potential was not there and the project returned to the concept stage. They said they then had to write off all the development costs, which has resulted in the big drop that they've had. But they also note that Alan Wake 2 is yet to recoup its costs as well, though Remedy are still pushing ahead with a co-op shooter and, quote, more regular cadence of sequels with Alan Wake 2, potentially Alan Wake 3, and Control 2. There's a little bit more in here about some Alan Wake DLC and Max Payne stuff. But Remedy, some of the best of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Not getting all the money, though.
Currently on maybe the run of their lifetime, perhaps.
Artistically, totally.
Yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love their earlier games, you know, the earlier Max Payne games and whatnot. But between Control and Alan Wake and kind of going forward, I think, and Max Payne being announced, the remakes, I think that's a very tantalizing run. And it is a shame to kind of see this because I think they deserve so much more. I do think there are silver linings in the news story. They might have said that Alan Wake hasn't fully recouped its costs yet, but they did say that it was the fastest selling Remedy game so far. It had a smaller budget compared to other AAA games of only $50 million, which is still a lot of money to recoup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're down now, but I hope they're going to be up soon. Because
there's also, like, no physical release for this.
That's
like,
it as
you
well,
know.
Man. Yeah, no physical release coming out at a time where there's a whole bunch of competition. Mm-hmm. It already being based, I sound like I'm making excuses, but it already being based on a game that didn't sell well to begin with. It's like, these guys are making great games, and I just want them to be bigger than they are. Mm-hmm. Though, I suppose, selfishly at the same time, if they were bigger, they might not be able to create games as interesting and ambitious
well,
as this. I'm not entirely sure.
They've nigh on said that doing the live service stuff and the co-op shooters is to fund the more ridiculous Lynchian stuff that they've really started harnessing now. Yeah. Like Alan Wake 2 is like the most Remedy-ass Remedy game ever, and I love them for it. It's one of the Alan Wake 2, I feel like, this is more of a thing that, something that would go alongside the spoiler chat that me and Adam Strawn did last year, where I love that game exists and I love my ride with it, but the more you try and make sense of it, the less it wants you to make sense of it. And it's just all about a vibe or a feeling or whatever, and something that is a very fine line with me personally. But it's the Alan Wake 2 is an artistic statement as a creative work is almost unmatched in gaming. The last time probably was Control.
I think you're probably right, man, and I think for $50 million in terms of its production budget, that thing rivals any current AAA games in terms of visuals. I think so many times where I just kind of stopped playing and loved that. Yeah, it might not have like the most detailed faces or animations or whatever, but like at a glance, the lighting and the environmental design and the character design all meshes so well. There's such a cohesion to the art design along with the technology that at points it made me think I was watching live action Alan Wake. You know what I mean? Like he just kind of, the way he was rendered against everything else just made him look strangely realistic, like a real person silhouette inside a world, inside something that is obviously surreal, but in itself looks grounded and realistic. And I think if you are pulling that off on this level of production budget. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to see what you can create with something like Control 2 when you've refined that even more. Or I absolutely go to bed dreaming at night thinking about this Max Payne remake and how good that could look as well.
We'll talk about that in a sec. The fact that they took so long for the last few years building this Northlight engine, which is like, that should only work out better on the financial side going forward. They'll have their own in-house engine. They won't have to license anything. And that game, like the Northlight engine, looks absolutely stunning anyway, like you said, Alan Wake 2. There is that scene, I forget how many chapters in that it is, but it's in the hotel. There's a bit where it's like digital Alan Wake is talking to Thomas Zane, and it's all like different versions of himself, but it's a live action version of him and a digital version, but they cut really quickly between the two. And I couldn't tell which one was which, and that was when I was like, okay, cool, you've actually nailed it, that actually is photo real now, which is really, really slick. But yeah, like the whole idea overall of building your own engine and re-securing the IP, like they didn't own Alan Wake for so long because it was an Xbox exclusive. But now that they've got everything back, like you see them try to dance between all the different rights and licenses and things that they can say, because Rockstar still own Max Payne. So they did as much as they could with Alex Casey in Alan Wake, but that was like Max Payne style writing. It was still the voice of James McCaffrey, RIP. And the way that they've like brought all of this family of stuff together, I think, like you said, puts them on the form of their career. And it's just fascinating to watch. You just have to hope that the bottom line makes sense.
Yes.
I think they've made good bets going forward. Like, you've got the potential of a live service. You've got the potential of a co-op shooter. The combat in Alan Wake was pretty solid. It was just some of the enemy awareness stuff that was a little bit hard sometimes. But I think they're making all the right decisions. It's just, I just hope it gets there. I hope they don't bottom out, because they are in a great place right now.
No, that's it. And I think, you know, like you said, now that they own most of this stuff internally and have managed to, you know, strike a deal with Rockstar to make the Max Payne remakes, I just hope that sets them up better than the previous deals with publishers. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it was their decision to not sell Alan Wake physically, or if that was it was Epic who published Alan Wake 2, right?
Yeah, and it's like, but that thing about talking about the live service stuff being funded by Tencent, they did do a huge cash injection deal thing with Tencent to get control over the finish line. And then they had to make that Crossfire game.
Yes.
And it was like this weird back and forth thing. So I think there's quite a lot of like nakedly obvious business deals to keep such a unique studio afloat.
I'd want to see them become a CD Projekt Red style entity, where they kind of retain that sense of independence and creativity, but manage to garner those relationships with publishers and, you know, third-party investors.
Kind of like FromSoft.
Get the money in. Kind of like FromSoft, to be fair. And just position themselves as this bankable studio that can also sell games, but it's whether or not these games sell. And you can look at all of the issues with their previous titles, like Control in itself being more or less unsearchable, by the way. I remember going to Argos to buy that physically. And when I searched Control into like their system, like it wouldn't even turn up. It was an SEO nightmare.
A TV remote, TV control.
Literally. I had to go to the desk and ask, and even they didn't know.
Well, they had that whole, with Control, they had that whole weird thing with the deluxe edition where they weren't honoring people. There was a whole thing where they weren't honoring the upgrade. You had to pay separately to get it or something. They pay the full price again. There was a whole thing with that game that it felt like it was a double dip, which would have been a publisher decision, assumedly anyway. But the Max Payne stuff, though, they mentioned this, I think it was last year, even though it leaked earlier, saying they are remaking Max Payne 1 and 2 with all the bells and whistles. The quote here is that it has the same development budget as Alan Wake 2, which, like you said, is about $50 million. So, like, remaking Max Payne 1 and 2 in the Northlight engine, sadly, James McCaffrey has passed away, so I don't know, he might have already done some new dialogue.
Yeah.
Maybe they already have some of the masters that they can just upscale or whatever from the original. Do you think they change stuff in here to make it all make sense with the wider Remedyverse? Because they Sam Lake's talked loads about making the wider Remedyverse is the thing they're the most interested in.
Ah, man, and here's the thing. I have faith in Remedy, but that's the part that least entices me.
Same.
When I was playing through Alan Wake 2, I liked a lot of the references to Control, but when the stuff from Control started really, you know, crashing into the narrative of Alan Wake, I like that less.
I wanted them to commit to it more.
Really?
Like, you don't actually ever go to the Federal Bureau as Alan. You don't really do, like, you know, they have that whole bit in the woods. I'm not going to do, like, full spoilers for Alan Wake 2, but there is a bit where all the agents are there.
Yes.
And it feels like they're going to go whole hog in that direction, and they really don't.
That's where we differ then, because I was so hoping not to go into the Control verse. I love the universe of Alan Wake. I like that the connections are there to make the lore a bit bigger, maybe allow it to make more sense. But I don't know, there's something about these worlds being connected but discrete that I like a lot. Okay. So going forward with Max Payne, I personally, this is just my opinion, wouldn't mind some connections, some light connections, but I don't want to personally see, you know, proper crossovers with characters or anything that. Because I think the Max Payne IP kind of works as its own distinct thing. So I'd kind of want to see them double down on Max Payne's specific elements rather than links to other Remedy games, but that's just me.
What I think they'll do is the same thing as in Alan Wake 2, where one of the TVs crackles and you see that dude whose name I'm forgetting, who's also played by Matthew Pereira, Candle.
The guy that's
the scientist who's investigating all the parallel stuff. I imagine he'll look into the world for one point, because there is a bit in Alan Wake 2 where they mention another person who is another version of Alex Casey, and it's clearly Max Payne, but they can't say Max Payne in that game because of Rockstar. So assumedly it's that. But that does mean it can work as a separate thing.
Yes.
It's just in the same wider universe.
I'd take that. Playful things like that and little crossovers and teasers and Easter eggs I'm totally here for. But yeah, I don't want... And this probably wouldn't happen, but I don't want to suddenly run into Alan Wake himself while I'm playing through the Max Payne 1 and 2 remakes. No. But I do like that they're being remade as one game. I think that's really cool.
Have they said that?
Yes.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, they're combining them both into like one big release.
Well, but as in like one execute, one story, like one 20-hour story?
I think so, yeah. Oh, like okay. They said they're putting it into one package, and I think what they meant by that was like combining them as to one big long experience. Might be wrong. You've made me doubt myself, but I think that's what I read. I'm pretty sure that's what
Either way, the idea of going back to those stories, that was a different era of Remedy altogether. Like, they really started to tap into something with Alan Wake, and then they doubled their F down on it with Control. And then Alan Wake 2 is like, it's just, like I said, it's the most Remedy-ass thing ever. There's, like, song and dance numbers in there. They've got loads of different fake TV shows, music that was made just for the game, like, things like that. Stuff that you can... look at all sort of 360 degrees of that production, and it all works towards that creative vision. And I wonder if they do that with this.
Question.
Yes.
You mentioned the live action stuff there, which I think is pulled off spectacularly in Alan Wake. I think it's, for me personally, it's the best live action footage I've ever seen in a video game outside of Immortality. Like the way it flows and the way it's shot, it looks like a movie. It actually doesn't, it doesn't look as cheap as like, you know, something like Silent Hill, The Short Message.
I was going to say, like,
live action bits, but it's cheap.
Having, like, live action clips in a game 99% of the time takes me out of it, because it just reminds me it's a movie or it's a TV show or it's not the same rendering look.
Yes.
But this works, it works better in Alan Wake.
I can only say it for me. I think the footage looks good and it works because of, like, the meta framing of Alan Wake or whatever. Anyway, the question I was going to ask is, and I think I know your answer now based on what you just said, but... Obviously, Max Payne 1, specifically, I can't remember about Max Payne 2, I played it less, but it had the cutscenes that were done in the graphic novel style. Do you think they'll keep that framing, or with their seeming preference for live action and their ability to do that now, do you think those will be displayed in a more live action way? Maybe not fully dropping the graphic novel gimmick, but maybe going like the Sin City route.
Oh, maybe.
Mixing live action and graphic novel aesthetics together. Don't know.
I always loved the comic book style noir kind of stuff when I first went through it. But that was back in 2001. I prefer that because I think it's got so much of like a stylistic flair to it. The thing that I was interested in is like, do you just take, because obviously, like I said, James McCaffrey's passed away. It was his face that they got closer to in Max Payne 2. Mm. But obviously it was Sam Lake's face in MP1. And then it's Sam Lake's face who is Alex Casey, face model-wise, in Alan Wake, who is himself who Max Payne is in a parallel dimension.
Yeah.
So like, do you just take that model from Alan Wake 2 and that's your look? And then you already have the model, the rigging, whatever, to use in the cutscenes. It's a way bigger project if they have to make cutscenes out of all those comic book strips.
Yes.
Because there's loads of scenarios and settings that only happen in those strips, like where the first time you meet Alfred Woden and you go and talk to him in the mansion, and have to render all that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. But I think, I don't know, again, just from the way they've been talking about the project, like they're giving it the same level of production as in Alan Wake 2. New release, like I think they
That'd be fascinating.
I think they're aiming high for it, so I wouldn't say it's out the question to get
no,
you know, radical changes and radical overhauls to the experience. I think it's going to be closer to a Resident Evil 2 than it is an Alan Wake remastered, put it that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny you mention it, because I'd love it if they take the Alex Casey model, maybe modify it a bit and put it into this game. Mm-hmm. But I'd also love it if they just took the model from Max Payne 3 and the flashbacks of that game and like make that, remake that in Unreal 5, and then that could be the model. Because I thought that was really cool.
No, dude, same. Oh man, me and you love, I love Max Payne 3 so much. Like when I was playing through Alan Wake 2, I then went through a big chunk of Control, and I then went back into Max Payne 3 again. And it's like, I cannot get enough of that character.
Well, I keep throwing you questions, right?
Please
but
do.
It's just occurred to me there, because I'm thinking, like, why do this? Obviously, it's arguably, if not the biggest Remedy property or the property associated with Remedy, but is this, do you think, a one-and-done project, or is this to maybe prove to Rockstar that they can cut a deal with them to make a Max Payne 4 and make something new in that universe, to be like, look at how good of a job we did. You're not really using this franchise. You don't need to sell it to us, but we'll make one for you.
Maybe. I mean, I think Max Payne, it is by far their most lucrative IP. Like, it is the thing that, especially at the time when Matrix was blowing up, Bullet Time was blowing up, Max Payne was the franchise for that, and it's what it's associated with. I don't necessarily need a Max Payne 4, but I view it as the wider Remedy authorship feel they've got, which is what Sam Lake's been talking about in all the making of stuff for Alan Wake 2, about being, like I said, super excited about the Remedyverse. Now that they have a creative vision that goes across their IP, they know how to thread everything together. And I think this is a way of revisiting like a first step to something greater with the wider knowledge they now have of like the way the world works, the literal fabric of that universe that Control explained, and then thread that back into Max Payne. And if they're redoing dialogue, cutscenes, everything, there'd probably be something in that wider sense that makes it, you know, line up with something in the Federal Bureau of Control. You know, like maybe there's something with the Flesh of Fallen Angels, one of those objects as a object of power or something, one of those syringes or something. Something like that. And I think the whole point of this is just to reclaim it. It's just to say, we haven't touched this in 20 years and we're a different Remedy now. And we can actually make this all feel cohesive.
I love that, man. I think they're in like, honestly, the position they're in, again, for better or worse, reminds me of Marvel in 2008.
Right.
Where they're trying to, they're kind of sick of collaborating with people and they want to bring things in-house and start their own production company, whatever. And they have characters that they've made, but they're not necessarily the company's most lucrative characters. But they've still found some success with them. So to me, I'm almost thinking of this like when Marvel partnered with Sony for Spider-Man.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like Remedy partnering with Rockstar for the most lucrative character that was previously associated with the other team, which is Max Payne, and then being like, come on, we can surely, give us them back. If you don't want to sell it, come on, we'll sort something out.
If you do a Max Payne 4, like Max Payne 3's ending is perfect.
It is, to be
like,
fair.
Like, and Max Payne 3 is such a perfect sunset of that character. I wonder how much internally Sam Lake, etc., wanted to put their stamp on the end of that character. But the way that it went and the fact that it was, you know, Dan Houser writing it in Max Payne 3 and how dark that game is and how sardonic he is in that game, like, it's such a great, to me at least, a great third part of that character.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, how many times have we talked about how much we love Max Payne 3? If Rockstar themselves wanted to make Max Payne 4, I would be over the moon.
Right.
If anything, I like Max Payne 3 more than the Remedy games, you know? I don't like the atmosphere more. I love the more gothic horror stuff in the first two
games. Actually, probably me too.
Like, the writing in 3 is so good. The performance in 3 is so good. So I wonder if Remedy, you know, now that they're getting back into the Max Payne business. I wonder if they are thinking, or if they even want ownership over that character's ending, or I wonder if they, you know, would maybe wanted that in the past, but now with the lack of James McCaffrey, would they just kind of want to retire the character after this project? I don't know, like, there's a lot up in the air, but with Remedy, I don't know. For me, them getting Max Payne back, it's a big deal. And have to imagine, maybe not, maybe I'm talking out my ass, but I have to imagine it's a longer term plan for them, even if they haven't signed anything on the dotted line.
For me, it's a money play. Like, it's just like everyone is remaking stuff from the early 2000s. What have we got from that era? Max Payne. Rockstar's not doing anything with it. They both need the cash injection, or they'll both take it. Rockstar don't need it, but Remedy will take it. And there is the wider Remedyverse stuff where they can have a little bit play with what they're going to do. A little bit of a flitter of the fingers there in terms of what they're going to do with it. So, like, to me, it's an authorship, creative, artistic vision thing where they might as well. They could have done this years ago. Like, they could have updated it on 360. They could have kept going. They made the games backwards compatible on when the backwards compatible stuff happened on the Xbox side. And they've talked loads about like revisiting them and why they worked at the time and like etc. So for me it's an entirely creative endeavor to sort of reclaim something that is over there in a way, because it was always Rockstar's publishing.
Yes.
But if it goes further, cool.
You know how they should fully reclaim the Max Payne IP? They should
put him in Fortnite.
Well, he should, yeah, absolutely.
Probably end up doing that anyway.
Yeah, I'd get back to Fortnite. Horrible. Dan Durkin would be all over that. No, what they should do, Scott,
go on.
And this is my billion-dollar idea to you, Sam Lee, because I know you're watching
and listening.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, the plan, the idea. I was talking about live-action stuff before. You do Max Payne 1 and 2 with live-action cutscenes and do it in a way that is so much better than the Max Payne Mark Wahlberg movie that... When people say, where's the Max Payne film? You just say, well, it's in the game.
Yeah, it's already
there. There you go. We've reclaimed that as well. Don't forget about that Mark Wahlberg business. He's the real Max Payne movie inside the best Max Payne game you've ever played, maybe.
I had forgotten about the Mark Wahlberg Max Payne movie. Thank you, but also not, for reminding me of that.
Go watch it tonight. Treat yourself.
I saw it in the cinema.
Did you actually?
Yeah.
I was too young. I wanted to. No.
Oh, you didn't want to. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible time. The very last thing here is that we've got more Alan Wake 2 DLC coming up. One of them is called Night Springs, and it seems to feature a whole bunch of playable characters from across Alan Wake 2.
Yes!
This is a very fun way of doing DLC. I didn't write down what the other one was, but the point is that you have two major expansion packs coming to Alan Wake 2, which, in regards to Alan Wake 2 overall needing to recoup more money, you would hope that this gets more of a spot like on the game overall. It's not like it didn't just win a bunch of awards last year. It was many people's game of the year. Short in our case, only to Baldur's Gate 3. Otherwise, it would have been number one. But yeah, like I said, Remedy overall are in a fascinating place, and may they get the money they justly deserve.
Let's hope.
Yes. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Telford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. Keep in touch, and we'll catch you through the week.
Can I tell you one more thing before we go?
Yeah.
Everyone in Dragon's Dogma, when you say goodbye to them, says always a pleasure.
Really?
It makes me, and I'm like, is that one? I know that's a reference to us because we're just so big.
Yeah.
In two, I'm like, is that what I sound like when I say that? Like, oh my God, I'm going to stop saying it. Horrific. Anyway.
As long as you don't start signing off on the What Culture Gaming Podcast, I might have to give Mr. Capon Calm a DM and be like, I want some royalties, mate, if you're going to be using this.
Come on.
But anyway, take care. We'll catch you very soon.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.